All right, sometimes you're the windshield, sometimes you're the bug. Hello, this is North Shore Sports Night. I'm Rick Moore, along with Tim Kearns, our producer and engineer, Bill Proposky, and, of course, Bill Newell. I'm stepping on my cord here and hanging myself. What are you laughing at?
All right, I am laughing at your misfortune, okay?
Yeah, you're laughing with me, not at me. You've been in here. You've seen how I do that. I strangle you half the time.
There you go, I know.
So, you know. Bill Newell will be hosting the Sports Writers podcast tomorrow, of course, here on MSL. You definitely will want to check in on that. They always have tremendous amounts of information. Generally drops around Tuesday morning at 8 a.m., and Bill hosts Phil Stacey, Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, all of the Salem News, and Nick Cougarou of the Gloucester Times, and they have very timely information, tons of names and schedules and statistics and just about everything you can imagine for high school sports here on the North Shore. So that'll be tomorrow with the Sports Writers podcast. And, of course, you can also get that at the Salem News, needless to say. So tonight we sort of have the proverbial open forum in the first half hour, but we're not taking phone calls, so I guess that kind of negates that. But in the second half hour, we'll have Gary Larrabee focusing primarily on the Masters, other information as well, and then Mike Grenier will be talking about the upcoming Boston Celtics version of the NBA playoffs. But first, Tim, I'd like to start with cleaning out the attic here. I want to start with the Red Sox and your opinion of the first weekend.
Well, I guess typical Red Sox, you know, they lose the first two. And if I buy a single run eight, but, you know, the great fear was, okay, here go the Red Sox again. The bullpen can't shut down a game because they had leads in both the first two games. You know, the starting pitcher was all right. The hitting, it's early, still early, so the hitting's going to come around. Yesterday, the kid who closed out the ninth inning, three strikeouts, was the heart of the Yankee order.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I don't think that's been done since Dick Raddatz did it way back when, and in the 60s. But I just saw the last hitter, who was it, Joey Gallo. He made him look sad. The kid throwing for the Sox. My God, what a breaking ball he had, and he just challenged him. So that was a good sign, you know. They beat the Yankees by a run. They held on at the end. The bullpen came through. So, you know, it's early. You know, you can get your hopes up. You can get your hopes down. It's a typical Sox season. Still a lot of, you know, questions that have to be answered. Who's going to really play first base? Is Jackie Jr. going to be in right field after throwing the guy out at second base and the second baseman having a coconut sandwich waiting for the runner to get there? The throw was such an outstanding one. Are we going to see more of him in his .205 batting average? Well, you know he can play defense. You know he's got an arm. And so you're not going to be afraid to use him in that sense. We'll have to wait and see how it plays out. I want to see a starting nine and subs, just like the Celtics. They have a starting five, and now they have subs. I just hate this rotation of players because there's no consistency whatsoever with the players that you keep shuffling in and out of the lineup. You've got to have a starting eight defensively out there, and everybody else knows that they're going to fill in on occasion. That's my opinion. That's the way it's always been. Now this the shuffle that they play, the Red Sox especially, just drives me crazy. So we'll see. You know, it's always out there. You know, one and two. They're in Detroit today.
Don't tell me the score because I'm recording it.
Oh no, I haven't seen it, but I know they're in Detroit, and the game would have just might not even have started yet. Detroit's I think an hour behind it.
No, I think it was a 5 o'clock start.
Oh really?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah.
The score, but let me see if I can.
No, don't tell me. Don't tell me.
No. I just want to see what is what's happening. Oh, okay.
All right, we have, it's interesting. I listen to, I'm driving myself crazy with my high blood pressure when I get in the car and I turn on the Boston sports stations. And I'm getting to the point now, Tim, where I can't listen to them anymore for my own health. And the thing that just drives me crazy, because, you know, we've been doing this. I worked at the local radio station with Bill Newell for 100 years, and we've been doing this for at least 1,000 more. And, you know, we're positive. We try to remain positive at all costs. And the people, the hosts, the so-called sports experts who host these things, they talk as though they're the owners. They talk as though they know how to coach. They talk as though they have played the game. And when they call coaches stupid and they call players, names, and that they suck and that, they spent the wrong money on the wrong guy who's no good, it's every single day. And I tuned in for a few minutes today, and of course both stations were trashing the Celtics because they didn't play, you know, for position. And then they talked about, the Red Sox salary, not giving Devers and not giving Bogarts a raise. And then they talked about Scottie Scheffler, winning the Masters, and how he choked and how awful he was. I can't believe it, Tim. What happened to genuine people like Guy Manilla and Don Gillis and guys like that? Mike Lynch, where'd they go?
Okay. The guys you mentioned were true sportsmen who understood the game, who talked to the players, who got to know the players, who got to know the game. The meatheads that sit the microphones, not only in Boston, but all around the country now, are guys that couldn't make the freshman team and were pissed off. Okay? And they are, their idea of playing sports is to tear down everybody else. And so, the Celtics, because they didn't play for position, so they should have lost a few more games and dropped down, but have had an easier time in the playoffs. Yeah, I'm not so sure. They went out there and they kept the momentum going, and they crushed them. Remember, Jackson, they scored 139 points in the last game of the season.
Mm-hmm.
Come on, how can you be pissed off at that? How can you be pissed off at the run that these guys have been on since the second half of the season started? The way they played team ball, the way they've shared, the way they've opened up the floor. I would like to see their assist numbers prior to the All-Star game and since the All-Star game. I bet they are dramatically different.
There's so much to focus on, Tim. Like you just said, that kind of thing to focus on that. There's so many things about professional sports and sports at every level that we could really learn about, because these people, ostensibly, these hosts have, they have connections to the athletes, to the managers, to the owners, to the officials. You know, they have those connections, and we could really learn something from that. I know that, you know, as an educator, and you also as an educator, we never get tired of learning. And I know when I talked to someone like Coach Dale Dunbar at Winthrop High School. Now, everybody knows how fabulous a coach he is, and his hockey knowledge is off the charts. It's incredible. It's like encyclopedia. And he keeps saying, oh, I haven't learned everything yet. I got a lot to learn. And, you know, it's so much fun to learn the good stuff. But instead, they harp on all this other stuff that is, to me, meaningless. And then to crucify the winner of the Masters by saying he choked on the last, on the 72nd hole, and he can't take the pressure and all this other stuff. I'd like to see these guys just walk the course. Just walk it.
Because they've never played in a competitive game in their life where several million dollars are on the line, or a title is on the line, or a win is on the line. All right. All they do, and half the things they say, is all they're like shock jocks.
Mm-hmm.
They are the Howard Stern of sports radio. So the more stupid you can sound, the more people are going to get pissed off. They're going to call you up, and they're going to insult you. They're going to complain, and then you can play the game back with them. That's their whole shtick. You know, and there's a certain member of those broadcast teams that's now doing color on the Red Sox. There's a game I will never listen to. When that individual is the color commentator for the Red Sox.
I heard one, there was one inning in preseason when I heard who you're talking about. And it was a preseason game that was going along quite nicely, and the Red Sox batter came up. He had had a really good game. And the first thing that announcer did was get into stuff that he didn't like about him, how he choked in this game, or how he made an error in that game last year, or the year before, or the year before. But what bothers me, Tim, is that people love this stuff. I mean, you listen to this. I can't listen to it anymore, but I just wonder where those guys went, because, you know, we were brought up, until recently, there were so many great sports announcers in this country. And I go back to, people don't know him, but Jim Ryan of ABC's Wide World of Sports, he was the best ever.
Yeah, but you know what, Rick? All those guys, they're retired, they've passed away, and unfortunately, as JFK said, you know, the torch has been passed to a new generation, and that new generation has sadly fallen very short of the standards that were set by the Jim McKays, Jim Ryans, the Kurt Gowdies, okay, all these guys that them in all the broadcast booths across all the sports.
Well,
Harry Carey, when you go across the list, you know, another line of the great Red Sox broadcasters that we've had, and the Don Gillis of sports, you know, the Bob Lobel. How come we can't get a guy like that? You know?
Well, do you remember there was Guy Manila, and who was oh my goodness, Eddie Andelman. Now Eddie Andelman could criticize somebody, but he did it with tongue in cheek, and he did it with humor.
That was one of the best radio sports shows ever. Eddie Andelman, the gang. It was so good.
Yeah, it was, and I think the other thing I should offset that by, if anybody's listening and wants to you know, join in on this, we can open it up somehow. I do want to mention, I was not a Jim Nantz fan. I haven't been a Jim Nantz fan. However, this week, he absolutely blew me away. He did the basketball game Monday night. Was it last week or this week? Whatever week it was. You know, the championship game, the NCAA championship game. And then he comes back and he does the Masters. And he does both of them equally as well. It's just, the guy is a master. I have to give it to him. He's tremendous. And I do think the major league announcers, I mean, the network announcers, except for this, again, the sports talk shows, the actual broadcasters, the play-by-play announcers, I think overall are pretty darn good.
Nantz has certainly grown into the job. I was watching a replay of one of his first games. He was so young looking. And, you know, we're really been blessed. He lends credibility. I'm watching the replay of Scheffler trying to put on the green jacket yet, and he couldn't get his arms. He couldn't get his left arm in the sleeve.
Nervous. Yeah, I can understand that. But I don't know. I just want to get that off my chest because you know, you get in the car and I do listen to them. You know, when they interview people, and I think it's the interviews over on the left side of the dial, they've got I think they've got one pro. No, they've got a couple of pro athletes, and those interviews are pretty good when they interview another athlete because they've got athletes talking to them. But so much other stuff, it just gets in the way, and I think, you know, and people complain about Shaughnessy. Let's switch gears here. I love Shaughnessy's columns. And the thing about Shaughnessy, Tim, is that he might say in so many words, he won't use these words, but he might say in so many words, Kearns really sucks, or Kearns really sucked tonight. And then he'll go talk to you tomorrow. He'll go face-to-face to you tomorrow after you've seen that article.
Well, you know, Dan has been around a long time, and he's made his share of, or he's antagonized his share of, sports stars, and it happens. He's not afraid to come out and criticize, because that's his job, and he'll tell you. It's my job to say when somebody's sick.
Mm-hmm.
But he doesn't hop on it, and he doesn't forget the fact that the individual can turn around the next night and have a great game.
Yeah,
Larry Bird really stunk out the place last night, but tonight we expect him to go for 35 points and 20 rebounds, because that's the way Dan sees it. Dan comments on the individual effort, the singular effort, not applying it to the totality of one's career, because he's better than that. Unfortunately, there are those within the business that, their shtick is to say stupid things, exaggerate, and all to get a buzz out of somebody, have them call them stupid, then they can yell back at them, and that's all for the ratings. That's all it is.
And you know what kills me? Guy told me a long time ago, when I was at WESX as a part-timer, and I said, it's a 1,000-watt station, and it's okay. And he said, hey, you're in professional radio. How many guys can say that? And he said, like a Major League Baseball, 32 teams, and at that time you had 25 players on 32 teams. And he said, the 25th player on the roster on the worst team in the league is still a major leaguer.
That's right.
And you just have to respect that. And I think, that's the other thing. Who was I talking? We were talking to some people, oh my goodness gracious, just recently, about, parents in the stands and so on. I was talking with a coach, And boy, was it revealing, how things are, I don't go to I do go to high school games now to cover the games, but I stay usually with, Nick Kukuru or one of the writers. I kind of stay away from the stands. And at a football game, if I'm broadcasting it, or a hockey game, if I'm broadcasting it, I don't hear what's going on out there. But the thing about, parents criticizing, how they do it, it's just awful. And I just reject that. Sports can be so much fun, interscholastically or otherwise. And, it's your kid out there, man. It's someone else's kid out there. Jeez.
Yeah, you've got parents living through their kids' actions because they never made the team, and their son or daughter happened to be a pretty good athlete, and so they live vicariously through them, and they think their way is the best way, and I read a similar article. I may have been the same one where this coach was saying, stop trying to coach your kids in the middle of the game. Sit there and watch them play. Don't coach them. Don't tell them what to do, because that's what they have the coach for.
Well, I'm trying to get a hold of Salem State. There's some experts. There's some sports ethics experts. They teach it, sports psychology, sports ethics, and stuff like that. And I've been in communication with the communications director at Salem State, so we may have a guest at some point who will be able to talk to us about ethics in sports and sportsmanship overall, on the field, off the field, with the parents, with everybody else. So I'm hoping to do that. And meantime, Coach, excuse me, I've been hacking for the last 9 days here. Well, actually, no, only 6 days. We do have some scores in, so let me run these by you, and then we'll pick it up from there. In baseball, Austin Prep today whipped Bishop Fenwick 11-1. St. Mary's over Arlington Catholic 14-3. St. John's Prep beats St. John's of Shrewsbury for, I think, the second time already this year, 6-1 today. And according to Matt Williams of the Salem News, Connor Remley and Joe Williams combined for a one-hitter for the Prep as they beat Shrewsbury 6-1. Catholic Memorial 4, Xaverian 3, Lynn Classical 11, Everett 1. That's the baseball scores we have so far. In softball, St. Mary's 6, Arlington Catholic 0, and Triton moves to 2-1 as they beat Linfield 13-1. Girls lacrosse, Austin Prep 11, Bishop Fenwick 7, Shawshin over Neshoba Valley 10-3, if I can read my writing here. Peabody continues winning as they beat Beverly 14-10, girls lacrosse. Boys lacrosse, no score, I don't have any scores in. And then boys tennis, Hamilton Wenham 5, Ipswich Love or 0, Everett 5, Classical 0, Winthrop 5, Salem Love, and girls tennis, North Reading 4, and Pentucket won. And this is shaping up to be an amazing spring season already. All these games, I don't want to jinx it, but it's been a wild start to the season, Tim.
Yeah, you had St. Mary's and Austin prep in a real nail biter earlier in the week. St. Mary's, coached by Derek Dana, is an outstanding program. And there are teams that are pretty loaded this year in terms of individual talent. It's getting all that talent to play together again, just like the Red Sox. You know, you're in the first week of the season. The weather is against you a little bit. Today was a good day to play ball, but you've had some really chilly days, and DBW trying to get the field in the best playing condition possible. That's often a factor in these games. So it's first couple of weeks, you know, you plan to find your team, find your identity, and then you really see teams start to roll for the separation between themselves and their competitors.
All right, did I skip the score in there? Lynn Classical over Everett? Yeah, I did. Okay, Lynn Classical 11, Everett 1. Yeah, and so far, you know, it is off to a fast start. We're trying to keep up with it, and we hope to have some more scores here later on. And again, later on, we'll be talking with Gary Larrabee. We'll be talking golf primarily with Gary. He's got some things he wants to discuss along with the Masters. Then Mike Grenier will stop by in a little while, and we'll talk some basketball. I look forward to that and all that kind of stuff. And I look forward to your letting us know about sports locally, if you would. We don't have the ability right now to open up phone lines live, but if you would, you could email us at msonewsports@gmail.com, msonewsports@gmail.com, and let us know what you think. Trying to think of what else we have here. But we do have, well, I can't find this one other address I'm looking for, and I can't find it at the moment. Oh, my. 978-326, no, I can't remember. Never mind. 325-36, that's it. 978-325-3638. That's our phone number. 978-325-3638. So you could drop a dime there. Won't cost you a dime. And leave a message. And, you know, if we like what you say, we'll post it. So 978-325-3638 is our phone number. And our email address is msonewsports@gmail.com. All right, Coach, your turn. Pick a sport. Tell me about it.
Well, there was a game for the ages played yesterday in England between the soccer clubs Manchester City, and Liverpool. It ended up tied 2-2 as they're the two teams at the top of the standings. They're separated by 1 point. Man City in the lead with seven games to go, and they will be playing again within those seven games. So I know most of their fans and soccer fans around the world are looking for a repeat performance by both teams. They're both star-studded, and they did not let the paying public or the viewing public down in terms of the effort, the quality of the game. And so that was
cool.
Fun to watch, and all the commentators were just gaga over the display of sportsmanship and intensity that they had witnessed, all saying that is one of the best games that they had ever seen among professional soccer.
Cool.
The Revolution got to start picking it up. I know they lost their goaltender for the last couple of years, Matt Turner. He's going to be playing in England. And he's playing for the U.S. National team. So they're struggling right now. They lost again last night, 3-2. Just not the team they were last year. So remains to be seen how good the Revolution are going to be this year. Again, still early in their season, but lots of time to kick it into gear and get it going and make some points. So soccer, let's see, what else is there?
How about Formula One racing?
What's that?
How about Formula One racing? Have you been watching any F1 racing?
I get it. You know, my neck going, boom, boom.
Now, but I'll tell you, if you catch YouTube, they give you the highlights. You don't have to watch the whole thing. And this year, I'm a Ferrari guy, and this year, a Ferrari fan. I wish I could afford a Ferrari. And the world leader right now is a kid named Charles Leclerc. Charles Leclerc, and he is the number one driver for Ferrari, 24 years old, leading in points. And his main competitor is Michael Schumacher's son, and is Mick Schumacher, and I think he's like 21 years old. It's insane to see these guys going at 220, 230 miles an hour, and I don't think they shave yet.
Yeah, that, you know, the drivers are getting younger. I have noticed that over the last couple of years. Where, you know, the guys you get to know are the, all used to be the more veteran guys, the older guys that have worked their way up through the racing tree, so to speak. And yet now these guys are getting in these cars at 18, 19 years old and just whipping around, and they're absolutely fearless.
Yeah, and they're also great drivers. It's incredible. All right, Coach, let's take a break here if I can do it right, and we'll come back with Gary Larrabee. You're listening to North Shore Sports Night on msonewsports@gmail.com. We will be back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender.
Hi folks, this is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at MoynihanLumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.
Okay, that's enough. That's enough. We're back live. And Gary Larrabee, golf writer, sports historian, is back with us. Tim Kearns, of course, and we'll have Mike Grenier coming up in just a few minutes. Gary, I don't think the Masters disappointed anybody.
Only the billions and billions of viewers who wanted Tiger Woods to pull off a miracle and somehow win his sixth Masters and tie Jack Nicklaus for that record. But no, it was, I don't think it was disappointing to any of the rest of us. Scottie Scheffler came in number one. He left number one after winning. He is the new hot man on the tour. He's the new man right now. We had that fantastic finish with Rory McIlroy and Colin Morikawa both holding out their bunker shots on 18 before. Before we crowned Mr. Scheffler the champion. And of course, we got a chance to meet, at least briefly, to meet Scotty Scheffler's nice wife, who was there to give him a big hug and a kiss off the 18th green. But no, it was a great show overall. Scheffler was worthy, and from my perspective, I was happy for Tiger that he made the cup, but even happier that he shot 78-78 to finish the weekend.
Well, you know, Gary, they made note of the fact that late in the second round that he was noticeably limping, and so he's not back 100% physically. He may never be back 100% physically, and you know, I'm sure that probably had an impact on his game over the last couple of days. But he stuck it out. In reading an article by a guy on ESPN, they said that you know, for the first time that they can remember, Tiger actually played as if he was enjoying himself. That he talked to the crowd, he smiled, the glare, the intense focus seemed to be gone. That he was just enjoying his ability to be out on the court and playing again, playing competitively. And in the aftermath, I was listening to a radio show, and they were talking about Rory, that maybe he needs to adopt that attitude that that Tiger showed over this tournament and Jack Nicklaus throughout the end of his career. Sit back and relax and enjoy the game. And you may play better. And I think that's what he needs to do in order to get back up and win some tournaments.
Well, I think that's a terrific analysis of Rory. That's a bunch of baloney, if you ask me, Tim. Tiger, number one, Tiger tried to come back after not playing in a full-blown 72-hole PGA Tour event after 17 months or whatever it's been after this car accident when he could have killed many people. He almost killed himself. He should have had at least one tune-up tournament, but he thought he was too good for a tune-up tournament. And he thought he should come back and play the Masters as his first tournament back and steal the show from everybody else, which he did for 2 days. So I thought he was really full of himself and way off base to come back. But he did make the cut. But the golfing gods told him really, really stood with them to shoot 78, 78 on the weekend. In regards to the enjoy yourself type of approach to the game, you can't do that at Rory McIlroy's, I don't think, state of the game. I don't think he can do that. But Tiger thinks he's bigger than anyone else out there. He can pull off a miracle like this, and he pulled off a semi-miracle. But thankfully, he was never in contention on the weekend, and the number one player in the world proved it with a great performance on the weekend, and let's see where Scottie Scheffler can go from here.
Now, I'm reading the article on Scheffler. In 57 days, he won $10 million, winning four tournaments and going to number one golfer in the world in 57 days at 25 years old.
That's what professional golf is if you're good enough, Tim. And he is right now in maximum top form, and we're not sure where he'll take it from here. We thought Jordan Spieth was the next hot thing a few years ago, and he was very good for a couple of years, and he's kind of fallen off the golfing world a little bit. He missed the cut this weekend. So let's see how we can hold it. You know, when you win a lot of money, and from this point, I got to believe Scheffler will get some wonderful endorsements, some big money endorsements. Of course, he wasn't wearing any endorsements on his shirt, on his golf shirts over the weekend. Go ahead.
Tiger Woods stuff. He said he was wearing Tiger Woods stuff. He was wearing Tiger Woods shoes. They had a picture of the bottom of the shoe with the TW on.
That won't last.
I guess the next thing he's going to have is he's going to have the SS on it for sure. But Tiger was sort of his inspiration to get out there and to stay focused. But it's amazing he was practically throwing up in the morning before the final round started. And he was so nervous he cried. You know, and thinking of the possibility of what might happen if he played well yesterday. You know, so he's a human kid. Now, my question to you is, when was the last time that the number one golfer came in and won the Masters as number one?
I think Tiger did it twice back in 2001 and 2002. This graphic on the telecast yesterday. It's only happened four or five times before. I think Oosterhuizen did it back in 1991. Fred Couples did it. Tiger did it twice. And I think, anyone else? Am I missing someone, Tim? I think that's it.
No, I can't think of anybody. And the other thing, too, is, you know, you mentioned you were big on Scheffler last week when we were talking about, you know, who could be the favorite, simply because he was the number one golfer. He had momentum coming in here, but boy, the Masters has a way of destroying momentum, destroying your mental makeup. But he he played through it. Once he got the lead, he just was determined not to let it go. And you know, I guess he's taking a beating because he double bogeyed the last hole. Well, he had room to afford a double bogey and basically walk the putt in if he needed to, you know. And Rory holding out. Well, you know, that's a good job. He's not my favorite guy, but even though he's Irish, I don't know, you know. it's good to see him. Well, I'd like to see him get back and be competitive, but. Yeah, again, put his head on straight while he's doing it. But Scheffler, everybody was just amazed with him. They say he's like 6'2" and about 215, 220, and he just crushes the ball.
He hits the ball as far as DeChambeau, who didn't make the cut either. But just for a correction, Tim, there's no such thing as momentum in golf, and not on the PGA Tour anyways. Because you get out there and every week is a different tournament on a different golf course, whether it's a regular event on the PGA Tour or a major. And just for the record, one other player has won the Masters at number one, and that was Dustin Johnson just a couple of years ago.
Okay, I was wondering if it had, but I knew you.
Yeah, so that's the group. Yeah, that's the group. Anyways, one last thing that bothered me about this whole tournament was all the adulation that Tiger received. Granted, it was a great comeback and he made the cut, but I think it just proves that golf fans are a very forgiving lot, as are the golf media. And of course we know that Tiger's contemporaries are very forgiving, because Tiger has been the man responsible. No one else has been as responsible as he is for jacking up the purses so much over the last 20-25 years. But I'm just glad he finished poorly on the weekend, and he talked about playing in the British Open. Oh, what a magnanimous gesture that was to mention that yesterday.
Yeah.
When he's at two other major championships, hoping he will play coming up for the PGA Championship next month, and then the U.S. Open down the street from us at the Country Club in Brooklyn in June. But Tiger goes out of his way to mention, well, I think I'll play at St. Andrews, where he's won, I believe, twice previously. But for him to not even address the situation for the PGA or the Country Club reminds us all that he still has an ego the size of the planet Mars.
Yeah, and I read some columnist who was decrying the fact that it was called an accident because there were no skid marks. He 85 mile an hour crash, and they called it a crash. So you're alluding to that. I go back to that also. He's larger than life, but I think as a casual golf fan, Gary, I really enjoyed this Masters. It was fun to watch, and it was fun to watch the charge by McIlroy, the fade by Smith, and the final finish by Scheffler. It was all good.
Yeah, I think Cameron Smith's buddies mentioned to him after the final round yesterday that he will play better when the chips are down if he gets a haircut.
Okay.
Although he did win, the Players' Championship back in March with the long hair. So we'll see where that goes. I guarantee you, though, if he cuts his hair, we'll get a few more endorsements, that's for sure.
Mm-hmm. What's the story with the Salem Country Club now?
Well, I think the big showdown or the big revelation comes Wednesday night when the Conservation Commission and Peabody meets. I presume at that time they will discuss and maybe even make a decision on how, if they will be penalizing Salem Country Club at all for apparently cutting down several trees that are in the Conservation Commission's jurisdiction, not in the jurisdiction of Salem Country Club. Although, like I mentioned last week, the Conservation Commission members have shown themselves to be quite a bunch of blowhards, the way they have made this to be something comparable to the kidnapping of 17 children and robbing of 17 banks in Peabody.
Okay. What else you got, Gare?
Well, we should welcome a couple of nice guys into the North Shore golfing fold. Bill Cunningham is the new head professional at Ferncroft in Danvers, Middleton, Topsfield. Yes, that golf course is in three different towns, because that Tops Tedesco, which is in Marble and in Swampscott. We should also make note that Peter Brunson is now the director of their golf academy, which is for adult beginners. It's a great concept that they've been, they've held the academy for a couple of years. Peter Brunson from Manchester, who has been for the past 22 years working as a PGA professional in Europe, Iceland, Spain, Poland, and now he's come home, and a great position for Peter up at Ferncroft. And at the same time, Phil Lees, who has been the head professional there for 16 years, has now been promoted to director of golf. So we congratulate those three. And lastly, we should also mention, guys, that Toby Hearn, former St. John's Prep standout, longtime head professional at Ferncroft before Phil Lees, is now the new head professional at Bear Hill in Stoneham.
Okay, and I want to mention your article, Reading the Greens, is in today's Salem News. You can also find it online. I will link to it. And you got something in the books cooking for next week?
I do, but I'm not sure if I'm going to go down memory lane going back 40 years or if I might have to vent a little bit longer about this Tiger Woods situation. Of course, we'll also have to wait and see what happens Wednesday night with the Peabody Concom. Those issues may both be fodder for my column for next Monday.
I love it. Do you enjoy writing columns, Gary? Because I tell you, the I just remember Will McDonough and those guys in the Lee Montville and the Globe and your columns. They're fun to write, aren't they?
Yeah, they're different from the straight news story, the straight feature, or the straight profile. You can have a little more leeway how you write it and the approach you take. And of course, Phil Stacey at the Salem News, the executive sports editor, it gives me all the leeway I need, and I appreciate that very much. Offer opinions, facts, discoveries, whatever I can come up with, and I love doing it.
Wonderful. We appreciate your participation with us on Monday nights, Gary. Thank you so much. We'll see you next week.
Stay well, guys. Thank you.
All right. Take care.
Gary.
Excuse me. All right, Tim. Let's see here. Going to break and come back with Mike Grenier. This is North Shore Sports Night. I'll put some music on so I can cough freely. We'll be right back.
This season, start with a winning mortgage rate from your hometown team. Whether you are thinking about buying a new home or condo or refinancing your existing one, our loan rates are among the lowest anywhere. Check out our full menu of rates and terms and apply online 24/7 at institutionforsavingsloans.com. Institutionforsavings.com, member FDIC, DIF, equal housing lender. The North Shore is listening to MSONewsSports.com and our great selection of podcasts.
Hi, this is Phil Stacey, executive sports editor at the Salem News. Make sure to listen to our podcast every week with the sports writers from the Salem News, including Matt Williams, Nick Giannino, and myself.
MSO News Sports, connecting you to the North Shore.
All right, Bill, thank you. Look forward to that dropping tomorrow morning around 8 a.m., the Salem News Sports Writers podcast hosted by Bill Newell. Lots of great information every single week there. And now, let's bring on Gary. We just had Gary Larrabee, but let's bring on his colleague, Mike Grenier. Mike, welcome back, and how you doing?
Doing well. I mean, I was listening to you talk to Gary Larrabee, our golf master, and he is the master of information. I think I've said this before, in the entire country, I don't know if anybody knows more about golf, but he may not know this, Rick. Back in spring training one year, Jim Rice, the Hall of Famer, asked me to go play a round of golf.
Oh, okay. All right.
I refused. Tim, what do you say? I refused because I didn't like Rice. You know, it was just one of those things.
Tim, you with us? Hello, Tim.
Tim went out to watch the UConn basketball.
Apparently. Well, you know what? Let me try to bring him back. I don't know what happened. I'll be right back. Tim, are you with us? Oh, there we go. All right.
There you go.
Did you hear Mike's question?
No.
I said we're talking about Gary and how great he is about golf, but I told him that I don't think he even knows that one day at spring training in Winter Haven, Florida, I was covering the Red Sox, and after a spring training day, Jim Rice asked me to go play a round of golf with him. And I turned him down.
Okay, why did you turn Jim Rice down?
Because, number one, I didn't like him, and number two, I don't play golf. I thought those were two pretty good reasons.
Yeah, it's not bad.
It was one of those things. I guess I probably would have preferred to watch Danny Ainge warm up on a side court or something, playing basketball.
All right, my first question.
Jim Ed in his early years was known to be a surly individual.
Yes, he was, and you know what? As Bill Kaporis, my late sports editor, once pointed out, Jim Rice used to jump on the Salem Country Club golf course on various holes so that he wouldn't have to pay.
Oh, Jesus. Are you serious? Oh, my goodness.
I'm dead serious.
Oh, my goodness.
I'm absolutely dead serious.
All right. I want to ask you a question here, and then we'll get down to the nitty-gritty. First of all, who'd have thunk that the Celtics would have 51 wins?
I tell you what, and not only that, Rick and Tim, when they didn't look certainly like they were going to ever reach that figure when they were 18 and 21, but they went 33 and 10 the rest of the way. That's pretty darn good basketball. I mean, other than Phoenix and maybe Memphis, that's probably the best overall record in that stretch that we're talking about here, 33 and 10. A really great comeback, deserve a lot of credit. And I don't know if you want to touch on this, Rick, but obviously the talk around Boston and certainly around the league is, why did the Celtics win last night against Memphis when everyone else was tanking to position themselves for the playoffs, and the Celtics obviously have a possible matchup against the Brooklyn Nets?
Rick and I sort of addressed that, and I said, they went out yesterday and scored 139 points.
Right.
For them, it's all about the win. It's all about maintaining the momentum that they built, that they don't want to just throw a game away, because you get to throw away a game, you got to play, you got to break all the good habits you've made, all the progress that you've made, and then you could go out and just simply lay a turd in the first round of the playoffs, and everybody's going to remember, well, you tanked the last game, you lost the edge. Well,
right.
These guys, I think their intent is not to lose the edge. Doesn't matter who they right now look at it and go, we don't care who we play. As long as we play the way we've been playing, we're not going to lose. And they didn't want to lose it.
Yeah, and we should point out that regarding the Nets, who loom like a big specter here or whatever, but they did beat the Nets 3 out of 4 during the season, and they scored at least 126 points in those three wins. They scored 126, 129, 129. So therefore, and the Nets have had trouble defensively all season. So I think they're not exactly intimidated by the Nets.
Right.
When did this, and Tim, I want your opinion on this too, because the concept of jockeying for position by losing is totally foreign to me. As a teacher, as a parent, as the son of a Marine, as a coach, it's totally foreign to me. And where did that come from?
Well, I think, Rick and Tim, Tim, you may want to chip in on this here. I think it's a flawed system in the NBA when they expanded the playoffs to include these. It's a fraudulent concept having the 7th, 8th, 9th, and 10th teams in a play-in situation. That, I think, leads to the tanking of teams, because a team that's like a number one seed or a number two seed is obviously they want to play the lowest possible seed. And all these top teams that are ranked in the top 3 or 4, they're angling to do that in the final week or two of the season because they don't want to face a potential team, a team that is potentially really good, like Brooklyn, for example. It's a flawed system when they manufactured this play-in tournament that we're going to see the next 2 or 3 nights. That's my take on it. Tim, what do you think?
Yeah, to me, it just weakens everything. You get teams that, you know, that don't, like you said, don't belong in the playoffs. They got horrible records. But in order to make a few extra dollars, the league says, oh, well, we'll have this little mini playoff before the playoffs actually begin. And you gotta love it when, you know, those lower seeds manage to upset the higher seeds and disrupt everybody's plans. So, okay, so what did Tank and the season do? Because as I said, in order to lose those games, you've got to just simply get out of your rhythm. You got to get out of your momentum. You got to get out of your good habits. You know, you got to get out of the mindset of winning because, well, we got to lose this game.
Right.
So now you got to gear it up again. And the other team's coming in with nothing to lose, and so they're looking to take your head off.
That's right. And Rick, how about this? Let alone tanking on purpose, but if you're a person like yourself and myself and Tim, and you take your son or your daughter or your grandchild
yep.
to a game late
yep.
in the season, and you've paid $275 for a ticket, and that's, I'm just conservative here because some tickets are much more expensive than that, and you end up seeing the G League version of a team, that is completely wrong. That's completely alien to what should be happening on a professional basketball court or any professional league. You shouldn't be tanking to your loyal customers, especially season ticket holders, or the person who just goes once a year. Doesn't matter.
And we were talking
bad concept.
Tim and I were talking about this earlier with sports announcers in Boston, the talk show hosts, on how negative they are and how they're gross. They're just gross in their disrespect for everything. And, you know, they were talking about this team should have tanked or they should have done this and should have done that. And that just, it just exacerbates the whole thing. Because as you just say, you take your kid to go see a game whenever it is, beginning of the season, end of the season. You want to see the best product for the money you're putting down there. And the other thing, the whole concept of sports, I'm sorry, it's, you play to win.
That's right. You play to win. It's a foreign concept to actually get on the court or the football field or whatever. To lose on purpose, basically. I mean, the guys who are out there are trying, but they're like the 7th, 8th, 9th, 10th, 11th, 12th guys. You know, the guys deep on the bench are the ones playing 43. An example of that was the Milwaukee Bucks yesterday. They played three or four guys who never play as many as 43, 44 minutes. It was obvious that what they were trying to do was to lose the game, and they did. So, now, but what happens is this. Now, let's say the Cleveland Cavaliers, who play the Nets tomorrow night, you know, in their play-in game, knock off the Nets. Now, all of a sudden, the luster or the whole specter of playing the Brooklyn Nets is gone, and the Celtics would be playing Cleveland, who they would be favored, you know, they'd certainly be favored to beat that team. And not only that, the Celtics would now have home court in a possible second-round series against the reigning champion Milwaukee Bucks.
Mm.
So that move by the Bucks may end up backfiring on them if the Celtics can play to their capabilities and can knock off that first-round team. The Celtics would have home court against the Milwaukee Bucks if the Bucks prevail in their first-round series.
Yeah, you know, and to your point, Mike, on the integrity of the game, you know, it could sour those younger fans that want to follow, and then they see that, and they go, well, you know, what are these guys actually playing for? And they realize that it's just a money thing. It's not about playing for pride. It's not about playing for the trophy. You know, it's just a paycheck that they'll gladly accept and then simply walk away from. And
yeah,
maybe it was like that early on, but we didn't see the blatant hypocrisy of the team ownership and the coaching staff just to go, well, we don't want to play this team, so we won't win. And like you said, what do you teach your kid? Dad, can we like lose this game so we don't have to play this other team? Like,
right. Oh,
that idea.
That's a great way of putting it, Tim, you know. But accenting the positive right now, I give the Celtics coach and their organization credit for trotting out their best players last night against Memphis and winning by a handy margin, whereas Philadelphia did not play Embiid or Harden, but they still won. And the Bucks, you know, sat down their top 8 or 9 players. And Miami Heat, of course, didn't have to worry about anything because they were already established as the number one team. So they were all set. But accenting the positive here, the Celtics go into it, like you said, Tim, with all their good habits formed and playing their best basketball of the season. and they're playing on Sunday. The time has yet to be determined, and the opponent has yet to be determined. But in terms of mental state and their physical state, they're in really good shape right now, the best they've been in all season. So, except obviously for Robert Williams, but we knew about him a couple weeks ago. But even on that note, Rick, I think you'd like this guy, Daniel Tice, and Tim, I think you do too. He's come on strong these last seven or eight games with Robert Williams missing. He's averaging about 15, 16 points a game. He can get your rebounds. He's not going to block shot like Robert Williams. However, he can score. He can score from the three-point line. He can score on the shot jumper. He can score on the lob passes. And he's a pretty good defender who gets in foul trouble because the refs don't seem to respect his defensive ability. But as a defensive team, the Celtics are ranked number one. So they're not really fearing anybody as they go into these playoffs.
I think it was Scalabrine who said that the play of Tice is such that it enables the rest of the team to play as though Williams were in there. They play their same brand of defense. Tice, as you mentioned, doesn't have all the characteristics of Williams, but his style of play enables everybody else to continue that defensive play.
No doubt about it, Rick. And he just fits into that system because he was in the Boston system for 4 years previously when Brad Stevens was coach. And the type of system that this new Celtics coach uses, he's utilized perfectly. They don't need him to score the 20 points a game because obviously, you know, they have Jaylen Brown and Jason Tatum to do that. And Tice is just a different style player on offense, unlike Robert Williams, who doesn't have a mid-range game and who dunks on a lob pass and who's very athletic. Tice can go out and you have to respect him as a shooter if you're an opponent because he can hit the three-pointer and he can hit the foul line jumper. So it gives defenses a little something to think about. And I think the Celtics are really in a great position as they head into Sunday's game. And, you know, obviously they have the first couple of games at home and then they go to Brooklyn and we'll see what happens. But you have to like their position right now. You have to like their chances. And then get by this first-round series. And I would love the fact that they had a home court advantage against the Milwaukee Bucks. I think that would be a huge factor.
So what I've always liked about him is he plays hard and he runs the court. And if you're the opposition, you've got to account for that. You've got to account for him running the floor, that he's going to be there to get that lob pass, to sneak in and get a layup, sneak in and get a rebound. And he's 6'10". He's not Williams, the shot blocker, but he's going to contest. And he's going to make you change a shot every now and then. He's going to make you change a pass every now and then. And that's what their defense counts on, just simply being disruptive. And he plays with that intensity. And like I said, he's been here. He knows the overall system. And he's just fitting in with what the coach wants. It's run the floor, stay wide, open lane, look for the pass. And the kid's doing it. And that's why he's averaging 15 points a game, because he's given himself opportunities.
That's right. And we've seen the turnaround in, as part of that, Rick, right? We've noticed how Jason Tatum turned around his game maybe one-third or two halfway through the season, where instead of holding on to the ball for 17 or 18 seconds, he gets rid of it or he gets the ball back and then he takes a three or he drives to the hoop. Or he's certainly passing a lot more and passing a lot better than he did earlier this season. And of course, Jaylen Brown's had a great year. So, I think for the Nets, who are one of the weakest defensive teams in the NBA, by the way, that should be pointed out, the Nets are going to have a lot of things to worry about when they go into these games against the Celtics, because as much as of a threat as Kevin Durant, who averages 29 points a game, and Kyrie Irving, who averages almost 28 a game, as much of a threat as they are on offense, as a unit, they're a weak defensive team. And also, too, you talk about the hero ball. You could be talking really about the Nets, because I know in one game last week that they lost, Kyrie Irving and Durant took 60 of the team's 84 shots.
Yeesh.
60 of the team's 84 shots, and they lost. So, and Durant had 55 in that game. So, what good is it to have a great two-man team if you're not going to involve your teammates?
You know, it's funny. One of the things, I've been talking about the negative announcers in Boston, and Tim and I have been talking about the things that are so great to watch about sports, the really positive things. And we talked about Kyle Schwarber last year with that first base play. I don't know if you remember that. He screwed up a of ground ball over at first base, a toss to him from the pitcher. He screwed it up. And then the next play or two plays later, he came back and made the play, and he was demonstrative, and it was great, played to the crowd. But one of the things I really enjoyed watching is when they get these big leads, guys, and the substitutes are on the court, and the bench now consists of the starters, and somebody makes a great play on the court. They're hugging each other, they're laughing, they're jumping up, waving the towel, the starters are, and it's just great to see.
Right, we saw that in the last few games when the Celtics were leading by so many points, that guys like Hauser, a really good three-point shooter, was playing, or Luke Cornett, who was kind of a clumsy seven-footer, when he would make a good play, or one of the other substitutes would hit a three-pointer, right, Rick? Exactly. The bench was going crazy, and that's what a team is all about. So, I know you dog her a lot of credit for that.
I think the coach sat him down and watched them, made them watch tape of the University of Connecticut women.
Had to get that in there. Oh, jeez.
That when the starters are on the court, the bench jumps up and cheers.
Oh, okay.
I wouldn't doubt it, Timmy. And I'll buy it. But it will be fun, right, guys, to watch this potentially the most interesting first-round series of all, because national TV will gravitate to the whole Durant versus Jason Tatum and Kyrie Irving coming back to Boston. But Kyrie Irving only played 29 games this season. I mean, you don't know what he's going to do. If Jeff Bezos of Amazon called him tomorrow and said, let's take a trip to Mars, I think that, Kyrie might be tempted because he would want to see if the Earth was really flat. So you really don't know what he's going to do. He's so unpredictable. His behavior is so unpredictable. Although, deep down, he probably wants to stick it to the Celtics and stick it to their fans, because he's made overtones about Celtics fans being subtly racist. What does that mean? I mean, come on. Every city in America has had racial problems. And to put it all on Boston, it's just the coward's way out, in my opinion. And that's what, to me, Kyrie Irving is very much a coward.
Well, the other thing the talking heads were mentioning, their fear of Brooklyn, was it Simmons? Is that his name?
Ben.
Yeah.
Yes. Former 76ers.
Yeah, that he's going to come back and destroy the Celtics.
Well, I know for a fact that right now they don't even have a timetable on him returning. Of course, he had so-called mental issues, and he's had a back problem all year, and he hasn't played. And it would be really kind of surprising if he played in this next series. Although you never know. These guys can be cured overnight. So, but at this point, I have not seen a single thing saying that he was close to ready. So I guess we have to wait until Sunday to game one and see what happens. But I kind of suspect he won't be ready. And even if he is, we know that he's not a good offensive player, and he hasn't played all year. He's a terrible free throw shooter. And I think at this late stage, to just put him in a starting lineup against the Celtics, there'd be a risk that Brooklyn would be taking, I think.
So, Mike, what do you think the Lakers' chances are at getting to the finals this year?
Oh, my goodness. I made a comment, Tim, that, of course, our boy LeBron James missed the last couple of games of the regular season. He probably thinks that the Lakers have a first-round bye.
Oh, God.
What a season, right? They finished 16 games under 500. And, Rick, we think of the Lakers and the Celtics, the Minneapolis Lakers, and the old Boston Celtics and all that, traditional rivals, great teams over the years. But they have missed the playoffs 7 of the last 9 seasons.
That's amazing, yeah. That's really crazy, especially when you have these hand-picked all-star teams now, you know?
Right, and maybe that's not the way to go, is it, huh?
It's looking more and more like it's not. Tim, any final thoughts?
It's all about team. That's what it's all about. Not about individuals. That's why they call it a team game.
Yeah, I think we're in for a treat with this series, possibly. Yeah, I'm kind of hoping it's Cleveland. I'd love to see the Nets get upset tomorrow. But even if whether it's Cleveland or not, I think the Celtics fans will be really, stoked for this playoff run, because it's become a really much more likable team in the last 3 or 4 months.
Oh, that's a good term. That's a really good term. They are likable.
Mike, if they can get on a roll, this could be, I'm not saying this to be exact, but this could be shades of mid-1980s, with a team that could run you off the floor and not get ahead and not look back, share the ball, play team defense. Everything just seems to be clicking right now.
Yep, I agree. And at some point, guys, if they can get through this first round series, we could be seeing Robert Williams back.
Mm-hmm.
And that would be even, obviously, give them a better chance to go deeper and deeper into the playoffs. So.
All right, Mike. I do have a thing I'd like to talk about at some point because we need to wrap this up. But Tim and I talk a lot about coverage of sports and sports writers, sports journalists, and so on. I want to ask you, not now, but to reflect maybe next week or the week after, about locker room relationships that we don't have now, if you had to criticize a player and then go talk to him the next day or next game or whatever. Because I'd like to know what that is like, as opposed to how they do it today from a radio booth and never, ever meet the athlete at all.
Right. Yeah, oh, yeah, definitely. You know, Gary Larrabee and myself went through that period where we could talk to the players and we would have to face the music if we wrote something critical.
Okay, okay. Hey, this has been fun. We'll see what happens next Monday where we are.
That sure sounds great. We hope by then the Celtics might have a 1-0 lead in the series, right?
I hope so.
Yep.
Thanks, Mike.
All right, thank you, guys.
Talk to you later.
Bye, Tim. Take care. Bye.
Yep. All right, that's Mike Grenier, sports writer. I do want to know about that, Tim, about how these guys handle that, because I know that they're honest writers, and they will certainly have taken, you know, the pen to the paper to criticize someone at some point in the pros, and then have to meet them the next night or the next week or whatever.
Yeah, well, you know, a lot of the writers, the paper writers, you know, magazine writers, they do talk to the guys. It's the talking heads that man the microphones at the various sports stations. Mm-hmm. That the guys, all they are, you know, talking heads. They're talking heads that don't talk to anybody.
Yeah.
And they hide behind that screen.
I know, it's just amazing to me. I just, I miss Mike Lynch. I miss Don Gillis. I miss those guys. Jeez. All right, Coach, any final thoughts?
Just go now. It's go Celtics. You know?
I know. It's going to be fun, I think. Don't you?
I agree.
I do. Okay, Coach, thanks a lot. Talk to you next week.
All righty, Rick.
All right, be well, Tim.
Yeah, bye.
All right, bye-bye. That's Tim Kearns, who's our MSO analyst and ambassador of goodwill. Don't forget, tomorrow at around 8 a.m., Bill Newell will be hosting the podcast, the Salem News Sports Writers Podcast, which we drop every, usually it's Tuesday around here. And Salem News Sports Executive Sports Editor Phil Stacey, Assistant Sports Editor Matt Williams, Nick Kukru, the Gloucester Times Sports Editor, and of course hosted by Bill Newell. And probably a lot of talk about the Bruins and the Celtics tomorrow as well. That'll do it from here. I'll have a scoreboard up later on. Again, if you'd like to be in contact with us, please do so at msonewsports@gmail.com. msonewsports@gmail.com. This is MSO News Sports.
Hi, folks. This is Gerard Moynihan of Moynihan Lumber. And if you're planning to replace the windows in your home, I have just two words for you. Anderson Windows. Anderson is the most trusted name in windows throughout the United States. See the complete line of Anderson Windows on display at Moynihan Lumber in Beverly, North Reading, and Plaistow, New Hampshire, or visit us at moynihanlumber.com.
Moynihan Lumber, we measure up.